welcome to Middletown Strong, Looking Up with Russell Library. I'm Christy Billings, and today I have Stephanie Rush and Brianna Gagnon.
Hi.
Hello.
And we are going to be doing the Middletown Strong Romance Edition today. And you may think that you're not a romance reader, but I think after you hear what some of these ladies have to say, you may change your mind. So please stay with us. We're going to talk today a little bit about tropes. We're going to talk today a little bit about second chance romance, slow burn, friends to lovers, and some other types of things. We also are going to talk about queer romance. I'm really excited that we're going to be talking about more of a modern day romance. I think in the past, the romantic lead, the woman, was always expected to kind of give up something in order to find her true love. And I think that's not the case anymore in romance. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't like it in the past, maybe you may give this a try. So ladies, how shall we start?
I have a thought about the history of romance books in popular culture, so to kind of lead off what you just said, Christy. So I listened to a podcast a couple of years ago called, and now it's escaping me. It was all about like romance novels and in pop culture, and they talked a little bit about how romance was such a maligned genre for so long because it's mainly written by women for women.
How interesting, yes.
Which does not surprise me, knowing our society and our culture overall, but to hear it said like that makes sort of sense to me that, of course, the genre was maligned because it was women writing for themselves and for other women.
Right, so it was a second class. Wild.
And it kind of... It wasn't super popular because of that reason, but it seems like recently, in recent years, in the last maybe decade or so, it's taken a turn to become more inclusive, more diverse, and not just for female and femme readers.
Right.
Although it probably still is very much, the base is probably still very much female and femme readers, but the genre has changed a lot. And I know growing up, when I thought of a romance novel, I thought of a Harlequin or I thought of a Fabio.
Right. Shirtless.
Yeah, and we still have those, but the genre is not just that anymore. So I'm excited to talk about today, like what we're starting to see emerge as trends and what the genre kind of means to us.
So let's cover tropes, because this was new to me. Mm-hmm. So romances kind of do fit into some certain categories. Mm-hmm. So Brianna, do you want to take the tropes?
Yeah, so some of the tropes that we're going to talk about today are what we identified as kind of some of the more popular ones that you might notice if you're reading a lot of romance, especially contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about enemies to lovers, grumpy sunshine, friends to lovers, forced proximity, and second chance romance. And so I can kick things off with enemies to lovers. I picked Raiders of the Lost Heart by Joe Segura. It's an adventure romance, only one tent, which is a nod to the only one bed trope. Ooh. Which is spicy. Women in STEM, so it's got like the mummy vibes. Like they're looking for this lost, fabled, I believe it was like lost, fabled treasure. Mm. And she has to work with her enemy. Mm-hmm. But then they're going to come to realize, oh, I actually like you. Mm-hmm. I kind of hate that, but I kind of really like you.
Classic.
And this is just, which I think Stephanie and I have talked about before, but this is one of our favorite tropes. Mm-hmm. This is, I think, always been a favorite of mine, and I'm kind of realizing it now.
And it wasn't a favorite of mine until recently, so now we have that in common.
Yeah. So it's got just, the banter is just, like, top notch.
Yes.
Because you're just reading about these people who you can just tell, like, cannot stand each other, and then all of a sudden they're just going to, like, kiss each other and be like, oh. What's going on here?
What just happened?
Whoa. And so it's fun to watch them go from enemies to lovers.
And I think the thing I like about enemies to lovers, and Brianna and I were talking a little bit about this off mic yesterday, is that I go to romance for the feelings. I go to romance because I want to feel a lot of big feelings, which if you're a listener of this podcast, you know that because I read a lot of YA for the same reason. I want to feel and I want to connect with what the characters are feeling. So enemies to lovers is so fun because you're like, oh no, you're feeling one thing and all of a sudden you have other feelings. And as a reader, I'm just like getting tingles right now because you start to see the reader, the character feelings changing, and you're like, oh, feelings. So I get like goosebumpy with enemies to lovers, especially because you find that moment where one of the characters changes and you're like, oh, it is on from now on. Sometimes it takes a little longer, but that moment where the enemies become the lovers. I know there's a meme, there's a lot of memes online that are like, when the enemies become lovers and the person is like dancing, yeah. I'm like, that's me, that's me. I'm laying in my bed thinking about it and then they turn into lovers and I'm like, woo! It's just like these heightened emotions and feelings that the characters are typically kind of not wanting to feel. They're like, they're good in the enemies' hatred space, but when they start to catch the not enemies feelings, they're like, oh no, I hate these. But as a reader, you're like, no,
this is better. That's awesome.
And
I love
it. We see a lot of enemies to lovers lately. I think people really like that trope.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as a writer, it's really fun to write. Mm-hmm. I've written a little bit of like enemies to lovers stories, not full stories, but like little snippets. And they're really fun to write because you get to decide when that change comes and you get to decide how the characters are going to react. And it's just so fun.
My big question about enemies to lovers was, you know, I was still thinking in the old time romance was, does the woman now have to totally change herself because they're of the enemies to lovers piece? Like, she didn't like the guy because he was being whatever. And nowadays it sounds like, we were saying before that off mic, of course, that women are able to stay themselves and they don't have to change entirely. Like, wow, this is mind blowing to me.
Yeah, what I found with modern enemies to lovers, or I guess contemporary enemies to lovers, it's not so much that you've changed, it's that your perception of the person has changed.
Interesting.
Or the perception of the situation has changed. So like, I can still be my own personality, but realize that this love interest, I'm seeing them in a new light. Maybe we were in a situation where I saw them differently. I think that's more what happens. I mean, I'm sure there are still books where they change and it's like, okay, we're tired of it. But for this reader, at least, I'm like, oh, you saw something you didn't see before, or you saw this person in a new light. And that's kind of where the shift for me at least starts to, so one of the books that I brought about with enemies to lovers is called With Love from Cold World by Alicia Thompson. This is a workplace romance that's also enemies to lovers. And so you've got that tension because they work together and they hate each other.
Oh man.
But then they start to get into these situations at work, out of work, where they start to see each other in a way that they don't see each other regularly. So maybe they're not at work. Maybe they're at a work function or at a social outing. So like outside of that workplace situation, they start to see each other as slightly different people. And so I think that happens a lot in enemies to lovers. Yeah. It's a situational difference. Do you want to go on to another trope, or do we want to talk about some terminology? What are we going to do?
Let's talk about some terminology.
That sounds good.
Okay.
So I had heard about, like, for the first time on this podcast, I had heard some of the terminology and I'm like, oh, I'm fascinated. Tell me more. So let's talk about some of the terminology. Open door, closed door.
I feel like romance is one of those specific genres that has its own language. Mm-hmm. Some of this applies to other things, but mostly it's like romance has its own little language. Yeah. So I did pull some language terminology examples. I found romancemfa.com and it has a Romancelandia glossary guide to romance abbreviation and terms.
That is perfect.
And I just pulled out the ones that I use or thought we could talk about. So I didn't pull them all because some of them I was like, I don't use that term. But you know, so we have HEA or happily ever after, which as a general consensus is what makes something a romance, either a happily ever after or a happy for now. Mm-hmm. That's typically when a book is considered a romance. So if you're not sure if you're reading romance or not, that's a really good litmus test. A third act breakup, which Brianna and I hate.
Sounds terrible.
It is terrible. It's terrible every time.
It is.
Typically when the characters are forced into a breakup situation for various reasons, sometimes it makes sense, most often it does not.
Like a Romeo and Juliet?
No, more just like everything's going well, you're going well, but for some reason we have to break you up to then get you back together.
Okay.
Yeah. And usually it's because of a miscommunication or we'll get to that later. Yeah. We have catnip, or wheelhouse. So catnip.
Oh, catnip.
Catnip is a term. This is a general book term, but specifically like something that will get you to pick a book up 100%. Like for me, if you tell me it's fake dating and it's on a college campus, catnip, done. Like I'm picking it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that book is catnip to me. Or it's like firmly in your wheelhouse. Like it really fits right into the types of books you like to read. Mm-hmm. And we have the meet cute, which is typically how the two protagonists meet. And they can range from various types of situations depending on the type of romance you're reading. And then I added in cinnamon roll because cinnamon rolls are my favorite characters.
Yes.
And Christy asked me about this term a couple of weeks ago. I said, I love cinnamon roll characters. And Christy
said, I was like, what?
What is that? A cinnamon roll character is just like a character or a hero that is just so pure and you don't want anything bad to happen to them. And they're just so lovely. And I realized that cinnamon roll characters are like my favorite types of characters, whether they are the love interest or the main character.
Yep.
I just want to hug the book and I don't want anything bad to happen to them.
Yep.
So when there's a third act breakup and a cinnamon roll character, I get very sad. So those are some terms. And then Christy had also mentioned opening closed door. And I think this would be a good time for us to lead into the conversation about the spicy and steamy scale. So
perfect.
Listeners, this is going to get a little graphic. We're going to try to keep it professional, but just know that sometimes when we talk about romance novels, we are going to talk about some spicy or steamy, and that typically means sexual content.
Yep.
So we're going to be professional and allude to it, but we're going to have a discussion about what that kind of means when we talk about romance novels. So, Brianna, do you want to talk about open closed door?
Yeah, so a open door romance is really showing the whatever, how do I phrase this?
It's a, you're, the door is open
the door
to the
is
reader,
opened.
Right?
So that you're going to know. Yeah, so you're going to know what's going on when they are in their one bed or wherever it is they are.
Uh-huh.
You're going to know every detail. Sometimes it's going to be really detailed. Sometimes it'll be quick. But you're going to know what these two are doing.
Uh-huh.
Or in some cases, multiples. But we're not going to go that far.
Uh-huh.
But you'll know. And if it's a closed door, there's going to be none of that descriptive language kind of explaining what's going on. So
it's like,
really, the door is closed. You're not going
to
know.
It's like a fade to black
kind
of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or there's a, and then there's tons of things that fall in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you'll get like a little bit of open door and then the door shuts like halfway through the scene and you have to use your imagination, or there's not even a fade to black. It's just like the chapter's over and you just assume, or there's something that I like to call no descriptions, all vibes, which is like, you don't name anything, not naming any body parts. You're just talking about what's happening like emotionally. I like that. 'Cause it's like, I don't have to worry about the terminology that the author has chosen to use for those body parts.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes.
So sometimes when we get into naming body parts, it gets a little cringy. And I can't say I've ever read a romance where the author picked the right words every time. It's just, that's a preference thing,
it
I think.
Is. Yeah.
And some people don't care.
But
I'm like, don't name them. Just tell me what's going on in a vague vibes way. That I'm into. So typically when we talk about steam in romance novels or sexual content, we'll be like, okay, so how spicy is it? Or where is it on the steamy scale? I know some people like to use like emojis. Like sometimes people will use a chili pepper.
I have tattooed on my wrist as a nod to romance novels.
The spicy.
Yeah. So if I was like, okay, Brianna, that book you just read, where like how many chili peppers is a good indicator for me to know what I'm getting into and if it's a good book for me to pick up?
Yeah.
Because Brianna and I have had conversations where I'm like, that book sounds so good, but you told me that it was like open door for spice level. And I'm like, okay, not for me, not for this reader. And that is fine. We're not going to kink shame anybody. Everyone is free to read their own romance in their own way. But knowing yourself as a reader, I think also helps you pick better books. Okay, I feel like I should talk about my spreadsheet now.
Yes.
Oh, I would love that.
Yes, so then we can jump back into you know, some more topics. So Christy and Brianna know, and some of you also know, I keep a reading spreadsheet to track my reading stats. I've been doing this for a few years now, but this is my third year. 2024 will be my third year where I'm really tracking a lot, and I'm color coding it. I have a spreadsheet on my computer. And so what I do is I track the author, the title, the things I liked in the book, things I didn't like in the book. I gave it a rating. And then I also track things like author notes. So is the author female? Is the author a person of color? Is the author indigenous? Is the author queer? And I also keep track of the publisher so I can pick up more books by that publisher. That's a new thing I added this year.
I like that.
That's really getting me to hone in. And I also track the genre and subgenre. So is it romance? Is it contemporary? Is it an adult? Is it a YA? And then I also track my reference source, which has been huge. So I note down who I got the recommendation from, whether it was from a list I found online or whether it was a direct recommendation from a person or from a podcast, so that I can go back and be like, okay, my friend Casey, hi Casey, is huge for recommendations, and all of the books that Casey recommended last year were hits for me. Mm-hmm. So I know that when I need a book to read and I'm kind of unsure, I go to Casey because I'm like, all right, what have you been reading lately? And I also know if I'm getting recommendations from a person that doesn't match my reading, I track that too, because then I won't go to them as often because I know that I'm not going to match up as well. Mm-hmm. So I track all these things in a spreadsheet. And then, for one, it's helpful for me to know what I'm like as a reader, and it helps me pick better books because I have concrete data about what I've liked and what I haven't. And then for days like this, I can go in and search in the spreadsheet and type in enemies to lovers and pull up all the books I've recently read with enemies to lovers to bring to the show. So I track my tropes. Christy asked if I track them with like a check mark. No, but I probably should. I track them more generally in the things I've liked section. But I'll know that like Grumpy Sunshine comes up a lot in my stats. Mm-hmm. Enemies to Lovers comes up a lot in my stats. Only One Bed comes up a lot in my stats. So that's really helpful for me to go back and be like, okay, that book I read 6 months ago, I remember the cover and nothing else. And then I pull it up and I go, oh, I gave this one 4.5 stars and I really liked that it was forced proximity and hurt comfort trope. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of data, and some people are not into tracking data, but it helps me be a better reader. And then it helps me recommend books to other people too.
Yeah. So yeah, tell us a little bit about Grumpy Sunshine.
Yeah, okay, so Grumpy Sunshine is another trope. This is one of my favorites. Grumpy Sunshine tends to be, I will say this, it typically is she's grumpy and he's sunshine. However, it's 2024, we're really getting out of that binary. Sometimes he's sunshine and she's grumpy. Like, mm-hmm. It can be mixed up, it can be different genders, it doesn't have to be a female or male. It can be anything you want it to be. It's typically one protagonist is grumpy and one protagonist is sunshine and their love interests. So you get that dynamic of almost like enemies to lovers, not quite, where one of them is just like kind of grumpy all the time, the other one's kind of bubbly all the time, and that intersects in really interesting ways.
Yeah.
For example, I read one last year called We Could Be So Good by Kat Sebastian, which was a historical romance. And oh my gosh, Grumpy Sunshine to the max. There's two male characters and he was grumpy and he was sunshine. And it was just so lovely to see the banter. As with enemies to lovers, you get such good banter with Grumpy Sunshine because they see the world in such different ways.
Yeah.
And my husband and I have talked about this. We are a Grumpy Sunshine couple. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I like this trope, because it reflects my personal experience and I see myself a lot in the sunshine character, but I see my spouse in the grumpy character, which is really fun. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Brianna, do you have a grumpy sunshine?
I do. So I have a grumpy sunshine that is actually a sports romance called Fangirl Down by Tessa Bailey.
Ooh,
that's coming out very soon.
That's why.
So it's basically about this pro golfer and his number one fan. And he is very much the grumpy. She's very much the sunshine. Mm. Some other tropes involved in this story are, like, it's a comeback story. So he's basically kind of not at his best. And his fangirl still supports him. And then he's like, what are you doing here? Like, I suck. But she's still very much there. So the term that she gave herself is Wells Bell. Her name is Josephine, but she calls herself Wells Bell. She gets all decked out. She's got her signs. And so she ends up caddying for him and is kind of like, hey, like, get your butt back in gear because you're better than how you're being right now.
Okay.
And what's in it for her is she is able to afford to purchase insulin because she is diabetic.
Ooh.
And she's able to put money towards fixing her parents' golf shop, which is ruined. It was destroyed in a storm. So there's kind of, they're both getting
something
things out of what they're doing. But he's very much like, I hate everybody but her. Mm-hmm. Like, even his best friend, who's not even his best friend, but is like, he's like, I hate you, but like, she's great.
So is this a celebrity romance, sort of? If he's a famous golfer?
You know, in a way, I can
a little bit.
Yeah.
I know, like, that's a whole separate subgenre, but I know sometimes we get, like, celebrity characters, which I think is really fun.
Yeah.
What I love about what you just said, two things. One of the things that I think is a misconception about romance, and we can come back to this if we have more to say, but one of the misconceptions I think about romance is that it's just fluff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It can be. There are some books out there that are just fluff if that's what you're looking for, and sometimes that's what you need. But what I've noticed lately about contemporary romance is that it's romance plus other stuff. It has such good other stuff. You've got characters who have real issues. Mm-hmm. You have disability representation. You have characters who have challenging family trauma. And they're bringing that all to the table.
Yeah.
And it all kind of gets handled as baggage in one way or another in the romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that the way that romance authors are kind of tackling those things, either from their personal experience or just like through the written word, but they're taking these bigger things, pairing them with romantic feelings and making it a really fully fleshed out story. So we're getting these great love stories that are also about real people and their problems.
Yeah.
And I love that we're getting to see that.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's like, it's more than just, like you said, the fluffiness.
Yeah.
Like we're getting to some real world.
So. And there's definitely fluff. I love a fluff in my
book. So this,
I love
this one was like a 5 out of 5. In some of the spice scenes.
Mm.
Tessa Bailey is known for that.
She
is. So if you love Tessa Bailey, you will love this book.
Which is why I do not read Tessa Bailey. Because I know this about myself.
She is one of the queens of spice, in my opinion. Some of it, even for me, and normally I can, I've read all different levels, mm-hmm. but this was a lot at some point. So I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. okay, ooh. I'm going to close that door, I think.
So, we're done.
Yeah.
But I love the disability representation.
Yeah.
I love the piece that mm-hmm. bring up diabetes and have that be in a regular book.
Yeah.
And it sounds like just character development happens now in romances.
Yes.
That's wild. I love it.
Yeah. So I want to jump back to some misconceptions about romance since I started on that train. I feel like, so for a while, I didn't consider myself a romance reader. I didn't think that I was. As you all know, I read a lot of YA, mainly YA, and a lot of my YA has romance in it. And I didn't think of myself as a romance reader because, again, I was really stuck on that. It has to be a bodice ripper. Mm-hmm. It has to be a Fabio. And now I know that's not true, but I didn't identify as a romance reader because I didn't think it counted. And now I'm like, who gets to tell me if it counts? YA books have character development, they have tropes, they have romantic relationships, and they have happily ever afters or happily for now. That counts.
Absolutely.
For me, that counts. And so I've really expanded the way I think about romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's these common misconceptions that romance is only one thing. And that's not true.
Yeah, it's definitely more than one note now.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I like that it has expanded into YA because we're finding that young readers want that. They want it. They want to see it. And some of them also want to read Colleen Hoover, and that is
mm-hmm.
that is their choice because they're seeing it on BookTok. But I like that there's so much good romance happening in YA that I don't have to give them an adult book. They can find it somewhere else. They can find it in a more age-appropriate setting. And I'm also starting to see that, and people probably have big feelings about this, but we're starting to get sexual content in YA books, which is a topic of discussion for a lot of people.
And it's relatively new.
It is. It's relatively new. In the past, it was like very taboo. You don't talk about sex with teens. Number one, because if we don't talk about it, we can pretend they're not having it. Sorry, newsflash, they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's just reality as somebody who works with teens. But also, they can't explore it safely if it's not in their books. So putting more thoughtful sexual content into young adult books, it's actually really helpful for everyone because then they're not looking for it on the internet or looking for it in places that are not super safe. They're mm-hmm. exploring it in an avenue that was crafted for them. And so sometimes we get, it's more of a fade to black, but there's like, there's a tension, there's open discussion about gender and sexuality that we were not seeing in YA 10, 15 years ago. I was not reading that. But we have so much more discussion about it. And we have these authors who really know how to do it because they're writing the books that they wish that they had as mm-hmm. teens. And now these teens get that. And now us as adults who read YA get that. And they have such a talent for doing it in a way that is age appropriate. I will say, we do get a little bit open door. It's not super often. And when that does happen, I will say the characters are at the age of consent. So mm-hmm. that's where it gets dicey. So because most YA characters are not 18, it feels irresponsible to put that content in there. It's alluded to, it's discussed, but the stuff that's seen on the page, I have only personally seen it in a YA book with characters that are 18 years old or older. So I want to make that very clear.
Mm-hmm.
We're not having Harlequin romances with on-the-page sex in books with 16-year-old characters.
Right,
that's not what I'm saying. But it's become a safe space for these young people to explore the ideas of sexuality and the ideas of consent. The language around asking for consent, the language around talking about what you want, what you don't want, and talking about your needs is huge in YA now. And I'm so glad it exists because that language is so important.
And that definitely was not done.
No.
This is amazing.
And we don't even see that in adult books all the time.
I was just thinking that. I was like, I love when like we see characters like really telling each other what they want and what they need. Because it's like, it's almost like it's implied that like they can read each other's minds, but that's not how life works.
It's not.
That's not the real deal. So no, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And especially with young readers, we want them to know that these are conversations they should be having. And if they're not seeing them in books or in media, then they think they don't have to have them. And that's simply not true. And that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that this YA space is really giving room for these types of conversations. And then we have what is called new adult or NA, which is like the characters are just aging out of YA. Maybe they're in college. Maybe they're just out of college, but they're not quite an adult mm-hmm. yet. Which I love reading in that zone because they can do a little bit more with the romance, they can do a little bit more with the sexual content, and they can do a little bit more with the character growth
mm-hmm.
that might be a little stunted in a story about high schoolers, or you don't want all the baggage of fully grown adults yet. So it's like this nice little spot in the middle where everything's still kind of messy, but messy with a little bit of maturity. Sweet spot. I love that. Sorry, I just talked a lot. So if anyone wants to say anything else, please do.
Well, I would love to hear some of your titles.
Yeah.
Feel free. Yeah, feel free to share some of your recommendations.
Sure. So I actually have some subgenres to run down before we get into more recommendations.
Okay, sounds good.
So we've been talking a little bit about some subgenres, but Brianna has brought up contemporary. So contemporary romance is typically romance novels that are taking place around this time. Then you have historical romance, which, again, a little contentious because mm-hmm. I guess what is considered historical fiction is different to some people than other people. I guess there's a strict definition, but apparently it's 50 years.
Okay.
Huh. That's kind of what I've learned is that 50 years from the contemporary timeline
is considered historical.
Yeah. But okay. That, as I get older, I go, yeah, but that's
not that far ago.
Yeah.
So people have strong feelings about that. But technically historical. So historical, we tend to see as like very historical, but you know, we're in 2024 now. Historical can really be
the 50s.
50s and 60s this point. And then you've got Regency, which is a subgenre of a subgenre of historical, mm-hmm. which I know, Brianna, you are a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
I am not, but I know you are.
Yeah.
So if I ever need a Regency rec, I will ask you. So Bridgerton, for example, Regency era historical.
Mm-hmm.
We have Romanticy, which is a new kind of subgenre. Yeah. Brianna, you want to talk about Romanticy?
Romanticy was, I think, very much spurred by the A Court of Thorns and Roses series and more recently Iron Flame and
Fourth Wing.
Wow, that would not come to me. But I read Fourth Wing, and that was actually my introduction to Romanticy. And that's never something I would pick up because I'm not really a fantasy girly.
Yeah.
But I was like, people keep saying how great this is. I'm going to just give it a go. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And so that was one book that I could just not stop recommending people read. Like, even if you don't think you like fantasy, you might like this one because there's a lot of romance in it.
Well, and the thing with Romanticy is that it's a mashup of romance and fantasy, which is not new. I think the term is new, romance has been in fantasy for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like with, you know, BookTube and BookTok and mm-hmm. Bookstagram, we're starting to see that mashup of that genre is growing in popularity, but it's not a new genre. It's just a new label that mm-hmm. I think has been emerging because there's tons of fantasy stories that have romance in them.
Mm-hmm. But maybe not the contemporary type.
Yeah.
Like the fantasy before was really like the old school romance,
yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
Where like, it was very much male-centric.
And like damsel in distress.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're right. Yeah. So it's kind of changed along with the genre. And it's changed along with with kind of the current trends.
Yeah.
So romanticism is very big right now. Rom-com is another subgenre. I love a romantic comedy. I love a book that's funny and charming. So I tend to pick up rom-coms. And the rom-coms also tend to have like really cutesy covers.
The cartoon covers
of the best. Which again, people have strong feelings about, because every romance book in the last 8 years has had like a cutesy cartoony cover.
Yeah.
Some of them are better than others, but mm-hmm. everyone has their thoughts on that. Yeah. That's a whole separate episode. We have dark romance, which I don't read, but I know is also pretty popular on the internet.
Explain a little bit more about what dark romance is.
I don't even know how to define it because I don't really read it.
See, when I think of it, I think of like the mafia romances or like the billionaire romances.
Yes.
There's just darker content, I guess. Yeah.
Like 50 Shades, would that be?
50 Shades okay. probably is a dark romance.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I know The Haunting of Adeline, I think is a title that I've heard kind of synonymous with dark romance. It's never really been my vibe.
Or I guess like a horror romance, which we don't see super often, but horror romance is kind of dark romance. It's definitely like a more mature themed romance book compared to like a rom-com.
Thank you.
We have paranormal romance, which, let's see, self-explanatory. I mean, you could say Twilight is a paranormal romance, but it's not the only one.
Right.
That actually has been growing. I've never read it, but I've noticed it more recently.
Yeah.
I was actually gifted a paranormal romance for Christmas from my niece. It's a vampire romance. I haven't read it yet, but it definitely has like that Harlequin type cover. So it's not something I typically pick up, but I'm going to try it because it was a gift from somebody I love. But yeah, I find that readers who like paranormal romance really like it. Like, they really like it.
I want to say that Bride by Ali Hazelwood, which is coming out soon, falls under that category. It's a vampire werewolf.
And she's a contemporary author. This is her first time writing paranormal, correct? We're starting to see that too. So we're starting to see these contemporary authors who've been writing just quote-unquote regular romances that are starting to dip into paranormal, because didn't you read one that had a shapeshifter?
So, there is a book called The Fake Mates by Lana Ferguson. I'm actually going to talk about one of her other books later on as one of the tropes we're going to mention. But her first book was very much contemporary romance set now. But then this next one is like shape-shifting werewolves in this like hospital setting.
When
like,
you told me that, I was like, wait, what?
The it same was author? Like a wild concept, but like such a great
but
book.
It worked.
It worked so well. And I never thought I would like something like that, because normally I would hear, oh, shape-shifting, like, eh, not really my thing. But there's just something about what Lana does that just makes me want to like eat up everything she writes. She's just amazing.
And that's the nice thing about when you find an author that you like and you trust them. And once they've gained your trust, they can kind of dip their toe into some other pools and see if you'll follow them along. So, and most of the time,
a hockey romance coming out.
See?
So she is literally like going all over the place. And I'm like, girl, you keep doing what you're doing, because I will just reading.
I'm going to have to check out the hockey romance.
Yes.
It's coming out in like June or July, I think, of this year.
Okay. And I didn't have this on my list, but sports romance is having a huge time right now. So I know last year, specifically in 2023, sports romance was like the top. There were tons of hockey romances. I read a soccer romance and I loved it, which was a shock. Tons of, a lot of football ones, but hockey is the really big one right now.
I think football will be right behind it.
Yeah. I read a baseball one a couple of years ago, too. But man, hockey and football, those are the two big ones.
That's really cool. And then you were just talking about the golf one. So that's great. I love that.
And I know we've seen some ice skater ones.
I did read one that was in a ballerina and a hockey player.
There you go.
And it was like single dad. She was his daughter's ballet teacher. And it was just,
adorable.
Amazing.
The setup really sells you on that one. Like when we talk about a meet cute.
Yeah, that's great.
If you say to me, that setup, I'm like, yes, that I want.
Yeah.
And I have two more subgenres just to mention. I don't have any recommendations for these because I don't read in this subgenre. But we have Amish fiction, which is huge.
Absolutely huge. Yes.
Huge. It's a huge subgenre.
That's a thing.
Yes.
All the time.
And we also have Christian fiction, which is also pretty big. It's a pretty big market for it. I don't read those, but lots of people do.
Yeah.
And so those are also in like the umbrella of romance. There's just so many options.
Yeah.
So many options. Okay, so do we want to go back to some recommendations? So anyway, pick a trope and toss one out.
When I'm thinking of friends to lovers, because I believe that's where we left off when we were talking about tropes specifically, I picked Red String Theory by Lauren Kong Jessen, and I loved her debut, which was Lunar Love, that came out in early 2023.
That had a cinnamon roll character. It had the cinnamon roll love interest. I remember we finished it, and I was like, Brianna, he was such a sweetie. I'm like squeezing my cheeks. You guys can't see me.
Her other, when we're talking about main characters, MMC is male main character. So I might say MMC, and that's what I'm referring to. And FMC is female main character. So I would say the MMC in this book was also a cinnamon roll. So basically, this was like a star-crossed lovers, like serendipitous kind of meetup. that just happens. And like, they spend this evening together and it's amazing. And they're like, oh my gosh, like this person is amazing, but I'm never going to see you again. Mm-hmm. And so of course, like they swap numbers, but the number that someone had was wrong. They both just, they never
connected.
But then fate brings them back together, which is actually a big part of the story, is that the FMC believes in fate, which has to do with this red string theory in Chinese mythology, that you're connected mm-hmm. to your person with this red string and you'll always kind of find your way into each other's lives. And the MMC is very like scientific, works for NASA. He's like, I don't, like, fate is not a thing for me. I believe in science. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of going through this scientific experiment of seeing if this red string theory is
Oh, I didn't realize that this one was about. Okay.
Yeah. And so they're coming together, just becoming friends as they have to work together. And then they eventually realize, oh gosh, like, we really like each other. Mm-hmm. And so that was just, the language in this was so beautiful. Like, I just had to, I highlighted so many passages because I'm like, this is just some of the most beautiful prose I have read. And I just love this book so much.
And that's a female Asian author, yep. correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, the genre has definitely gotten more diverse, but mm-hmm. it's still largely a lot of white authors and a yep. lot of straight authors. We're definitely seeing more queer authors and we're seeing more authors of color, but this genre is still, you know, because of publishing yep. as a general thing, still largely white.
Mm-hmm.
So we're also going to highlight some non-white authors later and some yep. other of our favorites. But
I do want to add that it is yeah. important to know the publishing companies.
Yes.
I think yeah. people don't really look at that so much, like, why do I need to care? But you do, because these are the people that are going to publish books mm-hmm. that you like.
Yes. Yes.
And authors of color and indigenous authors, I can't say the word, indigenous authors, mm-hmm. those publishing companies are the ones you want to look for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah. really interesting and take the time to notice that.
And yeah. that's why I started tracking it in my spreadsheet, because I know, for example, Balzer and Bray is a YA imprint that I love. I've almost every book they put out, I love. And so I started tracking that because I'm like, oh, no wonder I love all these books. They're all from Balzer and Bray, which means that their publisher is picking books of kind of similar values, similar themes. And some, not all, but some publishers also have romance imprints. So Berkeley mm-hmm. has a romance imprint now, correct?
Yep.
And I went back and I realized, oh, I really like a lot of Berkeley books. That makes sense to me because now they're putting a lot of romance mm-hmm. out. It's a little bit of extra work to kind of dig into publishers. Yeah. But the nice thing is, if you like a publisher and then you follow them on social media, you kind of start to get books that are a better fit for you in your feed. So
yeah.
I find that's helpful.
Your experience will just be overall better.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So it's definitely worth that little extra bit.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So I also have a friends to, you just did friends to lovers.
I did, yeah.
Okay. So I have a friends to lovers recommendation. This is a new adult book. It's called New Adult. So this is New Adult by Timothy Janofsky. This is his third book. His fourth one just came out. I literally have it on my shelf to pick up this weekend. Bear with me for a second. This is it's almost a queer retelling of 13 going on 30.
Ooh.
Which is how I was sold. Yes.
That would sell me immediately.
Yeah. Also, the cover is gorgeous. It's purple and has gemstones all over it.
Oh, that's very cute.
So the very brief setup is that one of our main characters is a stand-up comic, and he's going through a rough patch, and he makes a wish on some gems. Some, like, yeah. It sounds a little kooky. I know it's very, like, new agey and woo-woo, but bear with me. It's a millennial story. It's very for millennials. And he puts him under his pillow at night and, like, makes a wish and wakes up years later and is like, how did I get here? How is this my life? And has to figure out how to get back, if he wants to get back, and how to reconcile with this person that he's in love with. And now, 20 years later, I can't remember, is still in his life, but in a different capacity. It's very fun. You do have to suspend your disbelief. So it's definitely like a hint of magical realism, sci-fi. And it's almost like a time travel romance,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is super fun because yeah. then you get the characters in different times of their lives. But it ends up being a friends to lovers situation because they are friends in the original timeline. And then in the new timeline, they have to figure out how to kind of rebuild their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's called New Adult, but it's also in that new adult age zone because they're in their 20s, I mm-hmm. believe, and then in their 30s. So that's a really fun one.
I love that.
I love that too.
Yeah. I know. And the cover is just so great. Oh. And I feel like not enough people are talking about this one.
I haven't heard of it until
I read
it,
maybe in October.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why is nobody screaming about this from the rooftops? It's so fun. Yeah, that's a fun one. All right, what else do we have to recommend?
We could move on to forced proximity, which is always a fun one when you're basically putting your main characters together and they have no way of kind of getting out of that situation. Mm-hmm. So like one bed tends to fall under that.
Yes.
So I thought of The Nanny by Lana Ferguson, which is a nanny and single dad situation. Mm-hmm. So he hires her to be a nanny for his daughter, which is also in a way like a workplace romance, which can be fun. And so they're living in the same house. There's no escaping each other in that regard. And so they end up realizing how much they like each other, and it just takes off from there. Mm. It's just very, very spicy.
I also love a forced proximity in like an elevator, like a almost like a confined space, because then it's like you really can't escape. Yeah. You either have to ignore each other or just hash it out, which I think is fun.
Yeah.
I actually had one book that had like 10 different tropes. So I'm going to go back to With Love from Cold World by Alicia Thompson, because this is also forced proximity. Because like I said, it's a workplace romance, and then they get pushed together on a project. So they're working together all the time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means like staying late at the office. Sometimes it means coming in early. Sometimes it means working in the same office space together. And the fun thing about From Love with Cold World is that it takes place in Florida, but they work at a winter themed like attraction. So yeah, it's 80 degrees outside, but it's snowing inside. So you get this also like really interesting
cozy.
Yes. Like, so the forced proximity is even cozier because they're in a cold attraction. So that's a fun one. And that one also has a cinnamon roll character. So
love that.
Of course I loved it. And then another term that we sometimes use is book boyfriend, which is a little gendered, a little binary, but you can really use it to apply to anybody. But that book, the male love interest, Asa, book boyfriend, also bisexual. So it was like chaotic romance all over the place. He has blue hair. He's wonderful. So if you don't want to read the book just because of that, I don't know what to tell you. But
you're missing out.
Yeah. So that one has enemies to lovers, grumpy sunshine, forced proximity. It has all the things.
All the top heavy hitters there.
All the big ones. All the big ones. All right. What else do we have? Do you have a second chance?
I do. Okay, so the second chance I picked is actually by Rebecca Yarros, who is the writer of Fourth Wing and Iron Flame. It's called In the Likely Event. And so it's kind of this right person, wrong time. They met on an airplane, which then like crashes right after takeoff. And then they just keep kind of coming into each other's lives. And the MMC is in the military, so it's kind of like our FMC kind of waiting to see if he is going to leave that for her or blah, blah, blah. And he's just kind of like in it. He's not going anywhere. And so he ends up becoming her bodyguard. And so they are like stuck together in some pretty kind of sticky situations in Afghanistan. And so you kind of get a dual POV, which is the point of view. So you're getting both of their points of view throughout the story, which I liked because I like to know what they're both thinking.
I was going to say, that is very common in contemporary romance, is that you get the point of view of both love interests, which I also like, because then you're getting the, oh my God, what is happening? I'm catching feelings from both people?
Yeah.
It's fun.
And it's a slow burn, which we've talked about. Which
I'll come back to mine. Yeah.
I have issues with, because I'm like, no, just like kiss each other and like get it out already. But then there's something to say, and just kind of watching them slowly start to like accept these feelings that they're starting to get. And then once it all comes together, it's just like fireworks.
If it comes together well, I can do a slow burn. If not, I get mad and throw the book on the ground.
Yeah.
So, so I also have a second chance. So second chance romances, I didn't think I liked until I picked one up and realized I do. Again, any trope, almost any trope done well, I like. Not any, we'll get to that. But if it's done well, I don't really care what the trope is. Mm-hmm. And so this was a little bit of a twist on the second chance. So sometimes the second chance is like they were high school sweethearts and they broke up and they came back together. Or maybe one of them cheated and they came back together, which again, not a huge fan personally. Or maybe they moved away and like there's a circumstance that tears them apart. And sometimes the circumstance is silly and sometimes it's not. And so for this one, I read Stars in Their Eyes by Kaysen Callender. So Kaysen Callender is a trans author who typically writes children's books. And this was their first adult romance or adult book. And I was like, okay, I'm in. Mm-hmm. But because it's an adult book, it's very heavy on some of the trauma stuff. But this is two people who were kind of together at one point, and it's a celebrity romance sort of situation. And they're both dealing with their own stuff. And so by the time they really do get it together and come back together, they've worked through their stuff.
They've matured.
Yes. Yeah. And that's when a second chance romance does that. Mm-hmm. I am so in, because it shows that whatever the reason was that you kind of came apart in the first place, that time and that growth and maturity can really fix, unless it was like a big cheating situation, or like, depending on the situation, but a situation where like you grew apart because you just were immature and you came back together because you grew is great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's truer to life, I think, than we fell apart and we just randomly got back together. Like, no, you came back together because you both matured. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing. Do you have a slow burn? Other than that, that one's kind of both.
So that one was both for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do have a slow burn because this is the only one I think I've ever read and loved. So last year I read You Don't Have a Shot by Raquel Marie. This is a YA. And this is the soccer romance.
Oh, we were talking about this.
This is a sapphic soccer romance.
Yes.
So this is two female characters. They are at soccer camp together. And so it's also forced proximity. They are forced to be captains of the same soccer team, and they hate each other. So it's also enemies to lovers.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's actually more rivals to lovers, which is kind of interchangeable, but to me is like slightly different.
Yeah.
So they're not really enemies. They're more rivals, and they were rivals on the soccer field, and then they get thrust together to be coaches of the same team. So they have to come together for this cause. But they're both really doing their own growth in their own time. And so it does take over 300 pages to really get there, which is a little bit of a spoiler, sorry. But I want you to know going in, this is a slow burn, but it's so worth it. I got 320 pages in and I was like, are they finally going to kiss? Are they finally going to kiss? And I will let you figure it out. But I was delighted by the end of this book. I gave it 5 stars. And I was shocked that I liked a slow burn. I was shocked that I like a soccer romance. But here we are.
5 stars says it all.
Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a really fun one. That's the nice thing about romance, too, is, like, you discover a lot about yourself as a reader. Mm-hmm. Like, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have been like...
I'm not reading that.
No, I would have been like, enemies to lovers, no thank you.
Yeah.
And now that I've read it done well, I'm like, actually, maybe give me a little bit of that banter, a little bit of opposites. And sometimes it's also opposites attract.
Yeah.
Is an enemies to lovers situation. See, this is the thing about tropes, my friends. They're everywhere. They overlap.
Yep.
They can work together. Maybe we should talk about tropes we don't like since we're on the topic.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And again, we're not here to kink shame.
No.
We're not here to shame you for any trope you may like. Mm-hmm. We are here to talk about the ones that we do not like.
Yep.
With our own personal reasons. Brianna, mm-hmm. give me a trope you don't like.
I'll start with the surprise pregnancy trope, which if I encounter that, I will just...
Throw the book across the room.
I won't finish the book.
Yes. Yeah.
So there was a book I was reading over the holiday in like December, and I didn't know there was going to be a surprise pregnancy until I got to the middle of the book, and I was like, no. But I finished it, didn't like it at all.
Ugh.
But I felt like, and I normally will not finish something if I don't like it, but I felt obligated to finish this one because I was halfway through, but no.
And you don't have to reveal the book. We don't want to trash any books here.
No,
but was that an author that you had liked, and so you felt obligated for that reason, or you just were like already in, and so you finished?
I felt like I was already in, and okay. I liked the first book in the series well enough where I thought maybe it'll turn around for me, but
yeah,
no.
Because I find that if it's an author I like,
yeah.
and I'm like, this is your third or fourth book, and you're doing something I don't like, but I'm going to stay with you. And sometimes mm-hmm. it works out okay, but if it's an author you never read before, or like a new author, I'm just like, goodbye.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. So similar, I also hate that. And I also hate the proposal at the end or the wedding at the end. Sometimes.
Yeah.
If it makes sense and it's done well, I like it. But sometimes I'll be like, that's the best you could do?
Yeah.
It's like at the end of a teen movie when there's a prom. And it's like, really? You couldn't be any more creative?
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, of course you got proposed to at the end because... That's the only mm-hmm. choice we have. And it's very, maybe it's because it feels like very heteronormative to me
mm-hmm.
that you have to get married. And it just feels very like traditional in a
yeah.
sense that is not bad, but traditional in a sense that is limiting.
No other options.
Yeah. Like romance is the genre that's always, it's always moving and breathing and changing. And to constantly have that be the end of the book, it's like, it's tired. It's
mm-hmm.
tired. So
very unnecessary,
especially if it doesn't make narrative sense. If
yeah.
it makes narrative sense, I'll allow it. And there are books where I finished and they got married at the end and I cried and I was like, I don't even care, it was so cliche. But there are times where I'm just like, it feels like it was tacked on because
yeah.
it needed to be there and it didn't. So I'm like, don't give me a proposal unless it makes sense. Don't give me a wedding unless it makes sense. Don't give me a baby unless it makes sense. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. What else do you not like?
I will say, we have talked about this, but the miscommunication trope. And it's like, why do they have to miscommunicate to have some sort of issue that causes them to then break up, which is another trope, the third act breakup, which nobody if you love it, good for you.
If you love it, please tell me why.
Convince us. Because we can't.
Because your third act breakup doesn't work.
Yeah, because they almost always stem from some form of miscommunication.
Yes.
And it's like, just talk about it. Yes. Don't just assume what you know is what's actually reality.
I feel like we see this in romance movies, like rom-coms a lot.
Yeah.
It's just like, I didn't know. It's like, well, you didn't talk about it, so of course you didn't know. And I really strongly dislike when a book hinges on miscommunication, because from the beginning, that's like, you couldn't have chosen something else to talk about. So I picked up a book a little while ago. I won't say what it is. I'm not here to trash a book. And I didn't finish it. But it sounded really good to me. But then the first chapter, I realized the entire plot hinged on a character lying about their identity. And I was like, I cannot read this. Because that to me is the same as miscommunication. It's like, you started on the wrong note and you cannot recover from that. And it had a good rating, so I'm really curious, but maybe I'll read some reviews. But for me, I couldn't get past the fact that it started on a lie. And I was like, how can you create a romantic relationship out of that? And people who are in your cars right now and you're screaming, you're like, that's not real life. I get it. There are people in real, there are lots of relationships in real life where this happens and that's real. Well, guess what? I'm reading fiction and I don't want to read that.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to read that because it more accurately reflects your experience, fine. And I've had a conversation. I say this because a coworker of mine, I was explaining why I hate the miscommunication trope. And she said, Stephanie, you're so lucky that that's not your experience. And I was like, you're right. I am lucky that it's not my experience, but I also don't want to read about it. And that, as a reader, is my choice.
It seems lame. It seems like this is sort of like the things you were just talking about. This is the best you could do.
It seems lazy. And I don't want to call a writer lazy because writing is a craft. But sometimes I'll be like, it seems like a lazy writing choice to just say, miscommunication, as if there's no like narrative buffer or arc for it. So I'm not calling authors lazy. I respect authors. But sometimes it seems like a lazy writing choice to just be like, well, they didn't talk about it. Well, if they didn't talk about it, why? Maybe they didn't talk about it because there's an actual communication disorder, or maybe there's some sort of barrier, but just didn't talk about it and made a problem. Doesn't work for me as a reader. It just doesn't. All right. I also hate a love triangle.
Personally. I don't really read them.
I don't read them on purpose. I don't read them on purpose. And this sounds like, okay, going back to all the classic YAs. So you've got The Hunger Games and you've got Twilight. Both love triangles
for sure.
But the thing for me is there's always like an obvious choice for me. So a love triangle makes no sense. But it's interesting that like in the culture, there's always people on both sides.
Yeah.
So I'm like, for example, The Hunger Games. PETA. I was very much like PETA. Mm-hmm. And other people were very much Gale. And I'm like, okay, I see it, but also like PETA is right. But PETA is correct. But there are other times where I'm reading a love triangle and I go, how is it a triangle? That other option doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So love triangles are tough for me. Sometimes you see them in dating show romances, which is hard to get around because that's the structure of the show. So I read One to Watch a couple of years ago, which I really liked, but I was frustrated with the fact that to me, the choice she should have picked was so obvious, but they set it up like the choice was not obvious. Mm. And I got so frustrated because as a reader, I was like, do you not trust me to see that this person is a good fit? It almost felt like I wasn't smart, that the author didn't think I was smart enough to make the right choice. And I don't want to feel dumbed down to when I'm reading. Mm. I want the author to trust that I'm smart enough to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but that was just like a long tangent about love triangles.
I think that's also like a very classic thing that's been done to death as well.
Yeah.
Like, I love Janet Ivanovich, but we have the love triangle and we know that she's never going to pick. So actually, like, I'm thinking like Joanna Fluke. There's a character who bakes cookies and she loves the town cop and she also loves this guy who's a dentist. And so like, but they're never going to pick. It's a series. Mm-hmm. She's never going to pick either guy.
Right.
It's always going to go back and forth. And that's annoying. Like, that speaks to the I'm not your reader is not smart enough to know which one.
Right. And that's the thing. And I will say, I think a love triangle, quote unquote, I don't even like calling it that. This kind of situation can work if, for example, it's a queer romance and it hinges on the fact that this main character is trying to figure out their gender and sexual identity. Mm-hmm. That to me makes sense because maybe they're like, maybe they're gender fluid and they're figuring out, am I going to be with this non-binary person or with this man or with this woman? That to me is more of a character choice.
Not a love triangle.
Than a plot love triangle.
Yes.
So like it has some nuance and maybe I'm going to make listeners mad about this opinion. It's my opinion. It's fine. I'm very strong in it, but I want to see it in a nuanced way. Like you said, Christy, it's been done to death. Do it in a way that is nuanced or that is different, and maybe I'll be into it.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
That was like a tangent about love triangles. That's for no great. Reason.
No, I love that. Did we miss anything that you guys wanted to talk about?
I feel like we covered a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe we can move on to some romance books that we recommend, especially thinking of Black authors or
Indigenous authors,
people of color, mm-hmm.
yeah.
To kind of keep your. I know for me, a lot of these are going to be books to keep your eye out for in 2024.
Yeah,
that maybe I haven't read yet, but I've kind of read enough to know that these are definitely on my radar.
Yeah. Ones to watch.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you want to give us some of your ones to watch?
Yeah. So the first one I have is A Love Song for Ricky Wilde by Tia Williams, and that comes out February 6th, 2024. It's a historical romance set during like the Harlem Renaissance in Harlem. Mm. I was reading a little bit about it before we started recording when I was with Christy, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is literally going to be so good. And Christy had actually read Tia Williams' other book, which was The 7 Days in June.
7 Days in June.
7 Days in June. Mm-hmm.
And that would be like, I don't want to stop the recommendations because you guys have some awesome.
No, this can be your recommendation.
I loved this book. And I'm not really a romance reader. It's a second chance romance, mm-hmm. now that I know the term.
Mm-hmm.
And the heroine has a disability. She has chronic migraines.
Mm.
So I love this. And both of the characters are African American. Anyway, you cannot go wrong reading Tia Williams. So I'm looking forward to the second book too.
Yay. Yeah.
Keep going.
All right, go ahead.
So I'm going to list my authors of color first before I go to my last one, which is A Regency.
Actually. Perfect.
So next I have Pardon My Frenchie by Farah Richon, which is, I believe, going to be a workplace romance, and there's going to be a French bulldog, and I have a French bulldog, so that sold me right away.
That's all you have to know.
What the book was about. So I believe that comes out in June. So I'm very excited for that one. The next one is The Partner Plot, which I'm reading right now. Hmm. That comes out February 27th. It's a second chance romance, high school sweethearts that fell apart for a reason I haven't found out yet.
It better be a good one.
I hope so.
So tell me if it's not.
I'm at the point where they are now kind of fake married.
Because we didn't even talk about fake married, dating, which is super fun.
Mm-hmm. So they basically had a night out in Vegas after reuniting after like 9-10 years, I want to say. Mm. And they black out and wake up and they have wedding rings on and they're like, what happened?
Oh no.
And then they had a picture of them getting married, but it turned out to be a fake wedding. They paid to be fake married. And so they're like, oh good, we didn't actually get married.
That's a fun wild twist on that trope. Yep.
So our FMC is kind of like, okay, I gotta go by, see you whenever. And she has to do this magazine interview, and she is, and so the person interviewing her brings up her ex-fiance who cheated on her with one of her clients. And so then she kind of gets into this headspace of, oh, well, I actually just got married. So, like, I'm living my best life. Like, they can do whatever they want. And so she's like, no one's going to ever hear about this magazine interview. But then the whole town finds out. And so they're like, why didn't you tell us the two of you got married? To our MMC, who's like, I'm married.
Oh, no.
So the part I've left off it is he has just gone to our FMC and is like, what was this interview? Like, what's going on? And that's where I've left off, and I'm really loving it so far. And that is by Christina Forrest, if I didn't say. And then there's actually a book coming out in August by a Chickasaw author, so an Indigenous author. I want to say through Berkeley, which is like huge because it's the first major publisher to have a Indigenous romance.
And their romance imprint is growing, mm-hmm. So that's exciting.
Yep. So that one is one that is on my radar, and I follow the author, and the book is called The Truth According to Ember by Danica Nava. I think I'm saying her name right. I think it's going to be like an enemies to lovers, maybe workplace romance.
Mm.
But I am just, it's going to talk about life on the res, life in the city.
Cool.
I'm putting it on hold.
I can't wait to add this to my cart and purchase it for the library.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So as we were saying, well, we were talking about this a couple days ago, there's not really that many Indigenous romance books.
No.
And like I had said earlier, like this is, it's a growing diverse genre, but it's still very white. And so to see some Indigenous authors getting in on the romance is really fun.
Really exciting.
Yeah. And that'll hopefully open the door for others.
Definitely.
Cool.
Very much excited about that.
Yay.
And the last book I have is a Regency called Near Duke Well by Alexandra Basti, coming out July 23rd. And that one's going to be a marriage of convenience, found family, and historical vibes.
Fun.
And so someone I follow on Bookstagram just posted a review of this one a week or so ago, and she sold me on it. I had an early release copy, but I was like, I haven't been reading a lot of these kind of Regency era romances lately, but from what she said, this sounds like it's going to be a really good one. So
yay.
I'm looking forward to that. So those are my recommendations to kind of keep your eye out for. And
so I have three recommendations by Black authors and then three other recommendations. So I'll start with my Black author recommendations. I already mentioned Stars in Their Eyes by Kacen Callender, that celebrity adult trauma like romance. I swear there's good stuff. There's like light stuff in it too. It's heavy, but there's also like beautiful light romantic stuff in there. But no, it's a little heavier. It's a little darker. I wouldn't consider it a dark romance, but it's definitely a little heavier on the content side. So just reader beware. I devoured it, but it's a lot. I also have As You Walk On by Julian Winters. This is a YA book that I read, I think, last year. This is a Black author. This is a queer author. And As You Walk On By is a line from the Simple Minds song from The Breakfast Club, the Don't You Forget About
Perfect.
Me.
Yeah.
Every time I think about this book, that song gets stuck in my head, so you are welcome. This is a high school romance, and it's about a young Black boy, or young Black man, gentleman. I think he's 16. He has a non-traditional family structure, which I loved, and he's a cinnamon roll character. He's like so lovable, so sweet, and is just trying to find a boyfriend. And he's got some messy friendship stuff going on. He's got some racial identity stuff going on. And he's just trying to get through the day, trying to keep his head up, trying to get into college. And he just keeps getting pummeled by all these teen dramatic things and messy friendships, confusing love stuff, some fun scenes at a party. Very, very fun. Very, very fun and delightful. I would love to see some more Black authors in the YA space. Black male authors, we're getting there, which is like something that I don't know. I'm like, love more female authors, but in the YA space, Black male authors are lacking
a bit rare.
Yeah, they're a little rare. So I have another one by a Black male author too. My other recommendation is called 7 Minutes in Candyland by Brian Wasson. I read this one. This is actually my last book of the year in 2023. It has this gorgeous cover. It's bright blue with a Black male teenager and a Black female teenager. They're laughing and there's candy thrown all over the place. So our male main character has like a secret candy business that he sells to people from like a janitor's closet. And then he realizes that his parents are both therapists and people start coming to him for advice. So he starts a therapy business like out of the janitor's closet.
I love it.
It's really fun. And it's also full of like messy teen friendship stuff and, you know, falling in love for the first time and kind of learning how to navigate that space. And also like trying to figure out who you want to be, who is not your parents. So he's like, my parents are therapists. Maybe I'll try doing therapy. And I love that it focuses on therapy for teenagers, which we also see a lot in the YA space, is like, these characters are all going to therapy. It's a blessing. It is a blessing. But this kid is doing therapy basically in the janitor's closet for people. And so he has these beautiful friendships and beautiful relationships that grow out of it. So that was a fun one. And I'm looking forward to more from that author, because just getting some more Black male characters in the YA space would be delightful. I have three more other recommendations from the last couple of years. One is called Something Wild and Wonderful by Anita Kelly. This is a queer author. It's a new adult book, and it's about a couple that meets on a hiking trail. And that's all you need to know. It's delightful.
Just pick it up.
Yep, just pick it up. If you like hiking and you like romance, I think you'll like this book. Another one I have is called Behind the Scenes by Karina Stetz Waters. This is also a queer author, and it has middle-aged adult characters.
I want to read this one.
Yeah, so this is an adult sapphic romance. So you've got two women who work in the film industry. So it's a not so much a celebrity romance, but it's definitely like Hollywood setting kind of romance. And both of the characters are like just shy of 40 or just turned 40 years old. And I don't feel like we see that super often, especially in queer books. So that's delightful. There's also a dog that's featured in that one that is very important to the plot for you, Brianna. And then my last one is Dead Romantics by Ashley Poston. Have you talked about this one before?
I don't think so, but I don't think so.
Okay. This is one that you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. There's some magical realism, but it works. Weirdly enough, it works. And I haven't read it in a while, but I'm going to try to remember what it's about. The main character is a ghostwriter, correct? An actual ghostwriter. And she is sick of writing romance novels because she doesn't believe in them. And yada, yada, yada. Things happen. And she starts getting visited by a handsome ghost. And it sounds goofy as heck, but it works, and it's so tender and romantic and charming, and it doesn't sound like it should work, but it does. Mm-hmm. It does, and it was just so delightful, and I hugged it at the end probably because that's what I do when I love a book.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
I wish people could like feel the energy and the passion in this room that you guys are bringing to these titles and like the excitement. Like, I have started reading some of these books because of how well you have book talked them.
Thank you.
And I need a ghostwriter for one of my prompts. I'm doing a year of reading, and there's 52 prompts, one book a week, and one of them is a ghostwriter. I think that'll fit.
I mean, you can make it fit. Yeah. It's literally a ghostwriter and figuratively a ghostwriter, and I think you'll like it, Christy. It's charming.
I think that's lovely.
Yeah.
There was one more that I haven't read yet. Love it 350.
Love it 350 degrees. Yes. The Piers is the last name. The first name is escaping me of the author, but yes. And that is a baking competition show romance with older female protagonists and love interests. That one was very sweet and very fun. That one I would say is more on the fluffy, frothier side than most of the other ones. It's got some stuff, but it's definitely more on the fluffy, frothy side. So if you're looking to get in on a lighter note, yeah, I love it. 350 degrees is very sweet and very fun.
So we're going to try to put some of these titles on our website. Mm-hmm. So we have at Russell Library, there is a staff pick section. Mm-hmm. So because I don't think we're going to get all these in the notes.
No, probably not.
So we'll put some of these in the staff pick section. Mm-hmm. We'll put a link to that.
Ooh,
so
Lisa can Pierce. Go back. I just remember Lisa Pierce. Pierce. Yeah, that's I was it. Like, yes. I can see it. Lisa yes. Pierce. Yeah. And then, I mean, I didn't even name any of the ones that I'm excited about this year because I didn't even think to compile them, but it's going to be a good year for romance. Last year was a great year. And I think it's going to continue to be another good couple of years for romance.
Mm-hmm. We'll definitely check back in Shelf Life. We'll do some more of 2024 romance. Yeah. This is great. Thanks for listening, everybody. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so much fun. And we hope you read some romance.
Yes, and let us know what you think if you do read any of the books that we talked about or recommended.
And if you have recommendations for us based on the books that we talked about today, we'll take them too.
Mm-hmm. We love recommendations.
Yes, we do.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, and welcome to the segment we're calling Turn That Shh Up, projects at Russell Library that are too good to keep quiet. Whether you are a romantic or a cynic, Russell Library has something happening for you. Joining me is Shannon Barilleri from our Digital and Emerging Technologies Department.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And we're here to talk about some of the things that are happening at the end of February and going into spring. Our Youth and Family Learning Department will continue to host story times throughout the winter. On Tuesdays at 10:30 a.m., you can join our librarians for family story time for children ages birth to 6 years old, along with their families. Come to Russell Library's Hubbard Room to share stories, rhymes, and songs. Our children's librarians will also host story times on Fridays and Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. Come to the library to hear more.
So in the beginning of March, we are having a Middletown Pride karaoke
kickoff, I think it is. This is hosted by Middletown Pride. It will be in the Hubbard Room. It's 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, March 6th. I can tell you, I helped set up for this karaoke last year. It was so much fun. There was a lot of good vibes, good vibrations. Just a really great time to, even though like Pride's starting in June, but Pride is all year round, and I'm glad that we can host this event because it's a great time.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And we hope people will come out. And, you know, Russell Library appreciates all of the support that we receive from the community. We thank you for listening, and please visit our website to learn more about our events and resources. Middletown Strong will be on hiatus starting in March, but we hope that you will come back to listen to us next season and to hear more from me and Shan about what will be going on later in 2024.
Oh, God, so exciting.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next season.
See you next season, guys. Bye.